permits the hospital to change the use. And I'm not prepared to say that more than that, because I think the staff have to give some analysis of, certainly, what are you going to look at?
Something that would actually have to happen is in reverse order, is some kind of sector plan amendment or long-range plan amendment would have to be approved first.
That's correct.
And then once approved, it would be the basis for a subsequent site plan.
That's what I'm
saying.
I'm suggesting adding
to what the staff has done.
It is a limited sector plan amendment.
But you're saying...
May I hear finish? Because I didn't think Wendy was finished. Okay. Were you finished in terms of what you were saying?
Well, I was. I understood your suggestion to be that we should forward this to the County Council for introduction, and I'm not prepared to recommend that because I think there, from my point of view, there are too many open issues. I mean, John's described something that might work for me. I'm not prepared to say.
Understood.
Sign me up. I'll vote in advance for it. I kind of need to see it.
I'm not suggesting that I would vote in advance for it.
I feel like the open issues to my way of thinking are too significant. It's not simply, we'll tweak this and add a little qualifying language and then it'll be good enough. Because if, for example, the County Council for some reason were to introduce it and send it back exactly as it is, my recommendation would be that they not adopt it. Mm-hmm. And so it feels a little awkward to me to recommend introduction of a bill, which if it came back as I've recommended it be introduced, I would have to oppose. For that reason, it seems to me that before I'm prepared to support its recommending its introduction, that we need to do some more work on it.
I am making, again, several assumptions in terms of what I'm proposing. And I thought that it really incorporates the potential to do what you're suggesting as well, and that is if the staff, in fact, takes the testimony that it heard today and collapse that testimony into manageable parts in terms of what proponents as well as opponents in terms of this, what will happen is that, yes, they would have to look at this document. The County Council will, in fact, say, well, then you take that and you tweak this so that it meets the kind of comments that were being made so that it gets at those issues that remain outstanding.
Well, I guess I don't see the advantage of sending them something with a note that says, what we're sending you is a bad job. but send it back to us and we'll fix it.
The
question before us now, I mean, clearly there are not the votes to send this on in its current form. The question is, can you describe a text amendment conceptually that you might be willing to send that we can then ask the staff to work on for the next few weeks and bring it back to us, and then we'll decide whether it's good enough or not? Or are you unable to describe what you would approve, in which case we may be stuck? Now, Commissioner Robinson did a good job of explaining what he might support.
Yeah. That's why I started that there are three levels of impacts, where you expand the footprint of the facility, clear change in land use, where you don't expand the change of the footprint, but something so big that it might as well be a change in land use. Then, where you change things that there may be modest impacts that can be readily reviewed only at site plan.
Well, but see that
143-foot building.
Well,
also, I'm not really clear about what John wants. You're still assuming an R60 zone. I don't understand that.
What I'm saying is, it seems to me that the process has to change the R60 zone for the land that's relevant, and that change has to be limited. I think that's Commissioner's. I think that's one of Commissioner Perdue's principal concerns, and it's one of mine.
Well, I think what I was saying, and I hear people are saying sector plan, people are saying master plan. I think three or four of us have said it, and I guess I want to understand different people's views on what that means. I think what I was saying is it's not a zoning text amendment. We consider a sector plan amendment or an overall, you know, functional hospital plan amendment, and within the context of doing that, that way you have full hearings and you get all the information and the size, and you get, you know, you get, but it's a one-time deal. That's the difference between it and special exception. Yes, you know, the one-time deal is time-consuming and detailed, and, but at least you don't have to do it every time you want to make a minor change. You get your general plan. We did this for Trevil, big battles over Trevil, but then a long-term plan was worked out. But we do that through a sector plan amendment, and then when we're deciding that, then we look and see if we want to create either a new zone for hospitals or take an existing zone, because as far as I'm concerned, if I'm going to support something by right, it's not going to be an R60 zone, an institutional use of this size. I'm not going to be the second county in Maryland to do that after Baltimore County. I'm just going to, I think it, we owe the importance of this issue to give it the full process, but to not have to, I think the hospitals are saying, but we have to constantly give it the full process every time we want to do something. Well, that's not fair to them, but that doesn't mean that, you know, we have to shortchange it to the point where now we're only talking about site plan. So that would be my proposal. It's not truly a zoning text amendment, suggesting looking at limited type master plan or sector plan amendments.
Well, I think that there would have to be something in the zoning code, Commissioner, which says since you're looking at a particular problem with a particular use, which is hospitals, is that if hospitals want to expand, they have to do X, Y, and Z. And part of that X, Y, and Z might be come up with a long-term plan or a plan development or however we want to characterize it. When that process is approved, the land to which is attached is effectively rezoned. Now, that's a sector plan type process under a specifically designated procedure with sector type plan standards in it. Development type standards.
But if you look at all those zones, they always say it has to be consistent with the existing master plan. I think it was the mayor of Tacoma Park who pointed out that if you're going to go this route, even the route that we were looking at, you're going to have to end up amending the underlying master plan.
That's part of the problem. They're probably not going to be consistent with a residential master plan. They're not. Well, that's the point the chairman's making. You may mitigate impacts. You may deal with impacts. You may deal with residential sector plan issues. You know? But you are amending the master plan. And
well, that's what I mean. But just go ahead and it would be an amendment. That's how you would go about it.
So are you suggesting do a limited plan amendment every time a hospital wants
to? No, I'm saying doing it one time, do a long, and you get a long-range plan for the hospital.
Or 10 or 15
years.
I mean, for what it's worth, you know, it's interesting. There was no one here today from the Holy Cross community.
That's
and there's
right.
a reason for that.
The reason is that they
recently did the Forest Glen Master Plan, and that whole all these issues were worked out in that plan, so they know what they're going to get and what they're not.
Well, I don't know whether they know. If we were to adopt the language of the proposed zoning text amendment that makes hospitals a use of right, I don't know.
They're going to call him right now, so.
You're going to still be this time. There's language that says the site plan must substantially conform to the applicable master plan unless the board finds events have occurred to render the relevant master plan sector plan no longer appropriate.
That's a tautology in the current context.
I don't, right, it applies unless it doesn't apply. So
that's our discretion.
I'm not sure whether, given that the current draft would say every house in that neighborhood, you are a potential target to be an expansion site. You may think that it's sort of been resolved. I'm not sure that that's true, given...
It would be true if this were enacted.
That's
correct.
Well, that's one question we should get the answer to. Staff.
So what do I need to see? I don't know what I don't know procedure. You've heard different sort of recommendations of procedures. I have. I think the neighborhoods are entitled to know what the plan is, what the big picture, what the outer limits of growth are, and even within the outer limits, is the plan for a giant office building right at the edge? I mean, just sort of a sense of what the overall plan looks like, which, as someone mentioned, I think we did see that for Walter Reed. Didn't Walter Reed give... I remember seeing...
And said Walter Reed has a master... Someone testified that they have a master plan.
Now, admittedly, they don't need our approval, so it's in a different context, but... they have a big picture plan about where they might expand and where over the next 10 years. That sort of thing, something that, along those lines, seems to me the neighbors would appropriately could rely on. And then that if there is that, then the hospital gets
yes.
it easy.
Yes, but that's part of the problem. I'll bet you every hospital who came here today has that long-range
yeah.
plan. They may not have shown it to the community. And the reason they haven't shown it to the community is they would be delighted to show it to the community in a context where there's going to be a decision by an objective, elected, or appointed body as to which of that will be accepted and which won't, and it gets resolved. But that's not the way it works. What happens is the next time they need to build a building or change their parking lot, they have to go to the Board of Appeals, get involved in a long or lengthy proceeding, and at that point, everything that's in that long-range plan may be used against them.
So they have incentives to do
so
whatever.
So they have incentive to, you know, they have incentive. The clear process forces them to piecemeal, which is one of the problems
right.
I have with
so
it.
That's exactly right.
So a process that forces non-piecemeal, that forces a more systematic analysis is what
Thank
I'd
you.
Like to see.
Thank you. That's where I'm trying to
go. Well, that's where
I think
that.
I said that, too.
You said it a little differently, though. With all due respect, I think that what you're proposing is a more contentious, this is my term.
Sure.
Is a more contentious approach in the sense that I would think it has a tendency for there to be adversaries between the hospital and the community on a more ongoing basis.
I'm not sure that that's what I contemplated because I tried to keep.
I'm
the
not
concept.
Talking about not what you're contemplating. I'm you saying what
me.
I thought. What I thought that.
Well, I'm talking about just a master plan, old sector plan, or master
yeah.
plan amendment. That
yeah,
I think that's anything
towards
anything
what
else.
You're proposing.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I think that that has the potential of achieving what's being proposed here. But I have, I get beat up anyway, and I'm on the end of the scale, but. I see nothing wrong
Holy Cross
with
is right
saying,
down the road.
I see absolutely nothing wrong at this point with saying that, yes, those hospitals that exist currently do exist by right. Well, I'm sorry, Mr.
just so I'm clear, would you say, and anything in the future they want to do, they also can do by right? I think that's the issue.
That's the key, yeah.
Well, I don't think that that's the case, but I think that you ought to establish that those hospitals that are there, they should remain, and they exist. And as a result of their existing there by right, they do have access to certain rights. That's the way I feel. I know that that doesn't agree with you, but that's the way I feel. I think it's important. And I think that hospitals are critically needed public services.
Well, if I could jump in, that's the way I do all too frequently, but I think there's a key point that Commissioner Perdue made, is that, and where I was headed with my concept, because we do these things in sector plans, and we do them in plan development procedures. They're similar procedures. It's not just, you know, that... This is the overall plan. When we do sector plans, we have things like step backs. You know, it's the whole concept mm-hmm. of how that area that we are designing in a sector plan is going to interact with the areas around it. And that's why the planning concept is so important. And that has to be binding because unless the plan is amended, which I wouldn't advise a hospital to do very often because the community should be permitted to rely on it. You know? And then site plan details are where you put the trees and, you know, the et cetera.
The emerging two concepts right now.
At this point, I mean, the only conceivable approach that might get a board majority at some future meeting seems to be the one Commissioner Robinson is suggesting. So I would suggest that the staff try to put it on paper. And when it comes back, it may not do any better than the one we've got in front of us today, but I don't know that we can do a lot better than that today.
But I'm
unless there's some folks who just want to, you know, abandon the whole effort, which you're free to make a motion to do as well.
But I'm still encouraging, however, that the points that were made by the community, to the extent that they could be incorporated in terms of what you come back with, that they ought to be incorporated. I'm not saying ignore them. I'm certainly not saying that.
Well, I would hope that would be done. We have a record before us. The concerns should be addressed.
Joel, you had a question.
Well, just a clarification on the next work product. I was listening to Commissioner Robinson. I thought that he actually made a distinction between two different approaches, equivalent of a limited master plan process, and the other being some kind of plan development process, which I'm assuming would be kind of like a project plan. And I believe that Mr. Russ had mentioned at the beginning that we were already working on defining the long-range plan by using components that are in the existing ordinance for project plan. Is it perhaps a consensus that we come back with
I think we're more seem to be going more towards the master plan analogy as opposed to a project plan.
And not relying on that, just a site plan. Site plan is at the very end of the line when all the buildings have been worked out and you're coming in on a specific building. It's not
absolutely, that's correct.
It's not the way to deal with, you know, general hospital expansion.
But the project, okay, so when you have if we go this idea of a limited master plan, it has to have, at the end of it, recommendations for how to implement its the objectives.
Well, that's why maybe there's a blending of concept here, because under master plan, we may have a few diagrams. We have diagrams in the plan to say, this is what this might look like. Okay.
Right.
Now, I think under this concept, it's got to be something more, because I think for this master plan, process to work. Yes, project plan is a fairly technical term of art, and so I don't want to get too hung. I don't want to get too fixated on that.
Well,
but I think that the point that I think I share with Commissioner Perdue is the plan should be, say, with some specificity, what's going to go where. Master plans rezone the underlying zone. And they look at aggregate impacts, yeah. You know, the street network, and said,
well, doesn't that represent a blend of those?
Yeah, it is a blend of that. I think this plan needs to go a little further. It needs to show where the buildings. See, and I think there was a good enough analogy to Walter Reed. They came in and said, it's called a master plan, but they said pretty specifically what they were going to put where and what the functions were going to be and what the anticipated impacts were.
And I think the NIH, when they come before us,
they do the same
thing.
They do the same thing.
So
but they don't have to worry. They don't have to worry about the underlying zoning footprint issue because, you know, they're federal facilities. They could go out tomorrow and, you know, deal with that.
Well, this is helpful because I thought there were two options. It looks like we're
dealing
with
a blending of two, recognizing that there's two concerns. There's the overall type of concerns we looked at in master plan amendments, and there's the specifics. What is this thing going to look like in concept? And then there are site plan details. They're not going to build it all simultaneously. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I guess I'd just add, I don't know which of those ways to do it is the better. I don't have a view about that. My view is that I'd like a procedure where we got the big picture plan. I don't know whether the magic word is to say sector plan, master plan, planned unit development. I don't have a view on the right magic word. I'd like to have a procedure where we got a big picture plan that both has the outer limits and has a reasonable amount of detail about the of siting and what's inside. Not simply these are the borders and you can do anything you want to the edge of it. That would be one way, but that doesn't tell the neighbors very much.
Right, doesn't solve the problem.
So a greater detail than that. Obviously not a site plan at the
just
but some opportunity to lay out the for the community to know in advance and the hospital to know in advance that if what they once that's approved, if what they do is consistent with that, it's going to be relatively straightforward. Yes, we'll do. We may talk about the trees and the whether the lights point down or not, but this is consistent with their plan. It'll move forward relatively easily. That gives them certainty. What's the right way to do that? That's staff's job to figure
out. Right. The chairman cited to you how Holy Cross handled it to the master plan, but I would also, I don't remember the names of, but the Treville plan was a long-term, long-range plan with a lot of different land uses, bringing in the University of Maryland and all of that, and it got very specific roadways and how the traffic's going to work, but it also had flexibility. In other words, for the rest of their lives, they don't have to necessarily put elderly housing right there. There was some changes, but the basic framework, the understanding of the densities, the size of the property, this kind of thing, you knew, and you could have some certainty over a long period of time, but still have flexibility.
What you might do, I'm just thinking out loud, is first of all, you set the maximum expansion limits. I think, you know, with all due respect, the R60 zone, you know, it's irrelevant whether we want to still call it the R60 zone or not, because what's going on there is nothing akin to R60.
Yeah.
But I would, in a whatever this thing is called, this quasi-sector plan document, might set the maximum limits for the expansion of the facility. And then within that zone, within that area, I shouldn't say zone, within that area, subject to their actually acquiring control of it, of course, they would then, you know, you could then apply a new zone of the type, similar to the type that was applied in Treville, which I think was the MXN zone, which is a zone that gives the planning board, you know, site plan plus. I mean, really gives us the maximum conceivable ability to regulate exactly how the build-out occurs.
Yeah, but it also gave them the maximum flexibility.
Yeah, right,
too.
Flexibility. So at that point, it's you know, it's a permitted use, but it's a permitted use with a very strict level of scrutiny from us. And with the that might be the way to go. I don't know.
I think you're headed the right direction.
Commissioner Robinson likes the idea.
We were just commenting. I'm not sure if you can even call it a quasi-sector plan if you're going to recommend a zone. It's just got to be some.
You'd have to call it a sector plan if you're going to have a new zone. You're right.
Call it chicken soup. call it whatever you need to call it. Let's just get the end so that it accomplishes the things people have been talking
about.
We'll
think of a name for it.
What we don't want it to be is the amoeba zone.
Meredith, is it going to be a clean name?
All right. We may have gotten as far as we're going to get today. Any parting comments? All right. Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone in the community for your input. It was very useful. And
does that mean that
to be continued?
Mr. Knopf cannot make any more vocal comments?
Mr. Knopf is always welcome. Truly.
That was
truly.
Mr. Knopf.
The noise that the baby
used
on? Yeah.
Oh,
I said, hey, go on.
Number 6, preliminary plan review of a re-subdivision on Moody's Drive in Potomac.
How you doing?
Will you share your ambulance with me?
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say that these people. I don't say, oh my gosh.
For the record, my name is Kathy Conlon with the Development Review Division, and this is the preliminary plan for Falconhurst, which is a re-subdivision of an approximately 8.6-acre tract of land that is on the south side of Newbridge Drive, north of River Road, This will be a plan to convert the existing private school, the German school, as shown in the aerial photo here, to 4 single-family detached residential units. Grant the plan the same. We have reviewed this plan per the seven re-subdivision criteria. We have found that they have a high correlation with the existing lots and are in character, and we are recommending approval with several conditions. You have a new condition in front of you, which is requesting the applicant to try and extend the sidewalk that they're going to build in front of their tract down to River Road where there is a bus stop.
No speakers. Mr. Sears?
Good afternoon. Barbara Sears representing the applicant, and with me is David Nehru, the applicant, and Mike Watkins. And we accept all the conditions, including the revised condition that Ms. Conlon has mentioned.
Move approval. Staff recommendation.
Second.
No speakers.
Correct. No speakers. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. You stand approved.
Thank you very much.
Nice sight.
Number 8, new subdivision in the Woodside on Ballard Street. No, on 2nd Street, near Ballard Street. You only want to do number 7? Oh, okay. We'll do number 7.
Let's do.
Scared you there, huh? Number 7, McDonald Knowles on Gilmore Drive. Number 8 will be next. Okay. And there are no speakers on this one either.
Good afternoon. My name is Dolores Kinney. I'm with the Development Review Division. This is preliminary plan number 1-04076, and it's entitled McDonald Knowles. This is a subdivision application to create 4 single-family residential lots. There's a dwelling currently existing on the existing parcel. The property is located on the east side, of Gilmore Drive, about 300 feet north of Dennis Avenue, right at University Boulevard. Staff recommends approval. There are a few minor changes to the plan from the original plan that was submitted. One includes the relocation of the entrance to Lot 1 from the south to the north. The entrance to the driveway has been shifted a little, and the which was once attached garage or now detached garage to provide for open space or green space for rear yards for lots 2 and 3. Again, staff recommends approval with standard conditions. There is one change to condition number 2 to read that the noise analysis for interior attenuation to be reviewed and approved by MNC PBC technical staff prior to release of building permits. Thank you. That concludes my presentation.
Yes, Jeff Robertson with Cass Engineering, representing Robert Connor, LLC, specifically Josh Haynes to my right. We concur with staff's recommendations.
No speakers. Is there a motion to approve?
Yeah. Move approval of the staff recommendation as modified.
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries unanimously. And that preliminary plan is approved. And next one is the one on 2nd Street in Silver Spring.
Always come after a hospital discussion.
It's,
For the record, Richard Weaver with Development Review. Item 8 is Woodside, 105013. Ms. Kinney is passing out the minutes from the previous planning board hearing on that. This plan had been to the board back in 1999, or year 2000, actually, as a previous preliminary plan submission. It is a re-subdivision. It is located on 2nd Avenue at Ballard Street. This is the CX Railway. This brings Spring Street and Georgia Avenue located to the north and west. We are located right here. This is, again, a re-subdivision in the R60 zone. It involves three existing lots and two parts of lots. Again, the board has reviewed this previously, a different planning board of a different mix, and they did approve this. You will note that there was very little, there was not a staff memorandum prepared for that previous hearing. We kind of came down and discussed this with the planning board, but to remind those who were here and to give you some insight as to what occurred there, we are taking the three existing lots and we are adding the portions of the part of lots. Please note that this lot here and kind of in the middle is not interested in sharing in this bounty. They are not part of this application. So it's kind of a slightly imperfect world. We're trying to assemble some of these deeded portions, remainders, unplatted remainders of lots to people or property owners who wish to acquire them and put them into their lot configuration. What the result is are two rectangular-shaped lots and one L-shaped lot. In other words, the portion of the part of a lot behind the missing donut hole here will be assigned or consolidated with existing lot 17, creating somewhat of an irregularly shaped lot, also creating a lot that is slightly larger and has a slightly larger area than those lots in the neighborhood. We'd like to state that they are larger, they're out of the range, but we do not think that they're necessarily out of character with the neighborhood. They are similar in character. So, with that,
at least as much in character as what's there now.
Well, that's
it is
actually more in character with than what's there now.
Well,
that's kind of a paradoxical thing to say, isn't it?
I think it's an
very
important
rational.
Point because we get these from time to time where people are cleaning things up and we look at it and go, oh well. Gee, that's out of character, but what was there before was worse, and it seems odd if somehow we can't move in the right direction.
Yes, well, so bottom line, we're allowed to approve this if we want to.
Yeah. Yes, that's appropriate action with the conditions as put forth by staff. Yes, sir.
Just out of curiosity, is what's the rationale for that particular owner not participating? Does it mean additional taxes or what?
My guess is, and from my personal experience, yes, the tax bill would increase slightly, but other than that, perhaps the engineer would have some insight as to why he's not willing to participate.
Mr. Engineer, you want to introduce yourself?
My name's Dean Packard. I'm representing the Stingleys, and they are the applicants that decided to put this thing together, and it is unfortunate that in 1999 or 2000, we did come and get this approved, and then we moved to the record plat process, and apparently there was some... it took them longer than the time period to get the last bank signature on the plat, and apparently the plan expired, and we're back in front of you today with the same thing. That missing party 5 years ago didn't want to be party to the application, and they still don't want to be party to the application, and I can't read their minds as to why, but it I would think it would be a tax issue.
Okay. Any questions?
Move approval.
Second.
Second by Mr. Bryant. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
That's unanimous. And you are approved again. Record plats.
Good luck. See if you can get it done.
The plats are in order.
Move approval of the record plats.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 That's unanimous. Record plats are approved. And finally... Blockhouse
Point
Conservation Park Master Plan. Although the printed agenda said discussion, we're really being asked to adopt it, right?
Correct.
Okay. Just want to be clear on that.
Thank you.
Dr. Hench, Mr. Gibbs. Deer season is upon us, but I won't mention that.
Well, for the record, my name is John Hench. I work with the Park Planning and Resource Analysis Unit in the Countywide Planning Division. Here with us today to make the presentation are our division chiefs, Jeff Science, Barb Lurch, graphic design specialist, Dr. Jim Sorensen, park archaeologist, Mr. Jamie Christensen from the Northern Region. Jamie is the park manager for Blockhouse Point, and Rob Gibbs from...
It's always nice to see our park managers. I know you don't get over here that often. Probably don't want to get over here that often, but we like to see you anyway.
I hope you haven't been here too long and heard all that.
Well, then I figure that we're worn down and we're not going to have any tough questions for him, so...
Today's presentation is a work session that follows on the heels of a public hearing that was held almost 10 months ago, December 18th, 2003. We are going to begin with an overview of staff recommended planning board actions. You probably don't remember, but we do, that you asked us a number of questions during the public hearing that we have prepared responses to, and then we have also prepared responses to public hearing testimony.
Just so I know what's coming up, is this going to be our final, our only session on this?
Yeah, what I said earlier was that although this was listed on the agenda as a discussion, there's no reason that the board can't act if it's ready to act today and adopt the master plan. And this is a park master plan. This is not a, you know, a master plan in the legal Article 28 sense. It's our plan for what we're going to do with our parkland. And there's no reason why we can't act today if we wish to.
If we wish to, even though it's not advertised as our taking action.
I believe that's correct, but...
We might want to just...
Someone wants to call upstairs and confirm that.
Just to confirm... So we know. Okay, thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay, the first recommended planning board action that we'll talk about today is to adopt the master plan for Blockhouse Conservation Park with the addition of a trail concept plan. And we will go through that plan here in a minute. The second action is to amend the Muddy Branch Stream Valley Park Trail Corridor Plan, which you all adopted in calendar year 2002, to reflect the trail recommendations in the master plan for Blockhouse Point Conservation Park. The trail concept plan that we're proposing be added as an amendment to the public hearing draft consists of three major elements. The first is a shared-use natural surface trail for hikers, equestrians, and bikers that links the Muddy Branch Stream Valley Park with the CNO Canal National Historic Park.
Can you just point out on the map, please, which... trail that
sure
is.
Can. Rob, can you do that part?
And also, I guess, yeah, it's sort of, we're being kind of blocked. We can't quite see the... Okay. There we go. Great.
That's why they call it Blockhouse Point.
Okay, I think...
This is an element of the plan that fulfills a requirement of the Muddy Branch Stream Valley Park Trail Corridor Plan, which you adopted in 2002. That particular plan left to this exercise our selection of an alignment for the shared-use natural surface trail that would link Muddy Branch Stream Valley Park with the CNO Canal National Historic Park. As requested by members of the environmental community, to the greatest degree possible, this particular alignment north of River Road takes advantage of existing People's Choice Trails, the old bed of Old River Road, as well as the gas line right-of-way that's existing. In terms of resource management issues, we're all very concerned about additional fragmentation of the forest canopy, facilitating the spread of exotic invasive species, and the particular alignment that was selected avoids any additional canopy clearing or removal of trees.
And I did read also, but does it connect to an existing trail, or does it just stop at that arrow? In other words, if, as you're entering the park, the Muddy Branch Stream Valley Park, is there a trail there?
The trail will be constructed as part of the FY06 work program.
That part of the purple arrow. But what about, is that what you're saying?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, but what about where the arrow starts? Is there any trail?
To the north?
Yeah.
There will be.
Okay.
I have to tell you that Lynn Coleman was to be here today to handle trail aspects of the presentation, but about an hour and a half ago, Lynn got a phone call from the nursing home facility where her father's staying, and he's having a medical emergency, and family first, she's over there.
Right, I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I may not do as good a job answering 12 trail questions as she would have, but I'll do my best.
Okay.
Not as perky
either. Probably not as attractive either.
Well, even Lynn by this time of day after all our talking could be feeling a little... Okay.
Should I keep going?
Yeah.
Okay. The second element of the trail plan, and Rob, if you could point to this, is a shared-use natural surface trail for hikers and equestrians, linking Blockhouse Point Conservation Park and the Commission's newest equestrian facility at Calathea Farm. So linking those two facilities with the Chesapeake and Ohio National Historic Park. The major purpose of this particular element of the plan is to provide a trail loop for both hikers and equestrians that link these various park facilities between Pennyfield Lock and Violet's Lock on the canal. And also, as a matter of course, provide access to points north and south along the canal.
Is there an existing trail there now?
There is an existing People's Choice Trail. Now, within Blockhouse Point Conservation Park, this particular element of the trail concept plan takes advantage of an existing shared-use hiker-equestrian trail.
The yellow line does?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yep. Through Calathea Farm, we are proposing to work with the farm manager and identify a location for the trail that is between the pastures that are fenced and the environmental buffers that would be delineated according to our commission's own environmental guidelines.
Now, where does Calathea, let's see, it's not marked on this map. Where is it exactly? So that doesn't have a trail right now?
Well...
Or you don't know?
It in a sense does. The facility is currently fenced, and there are gates at the locations where people would enter and leave the park. And one of the things that this particular plan does that the previous trail plan didn't, and I'll get into this in a minute, is that... We worked with staff from the National Park Service to formalize trails that had been in use for a number of years across National Park Service property. And perhaps, Rob, would you want to say a little bit about that with the aid of the microphone?
Yeah, as part of the process, we've been working closely with National Park Service staff, and they've been out with us in the field a couple of times to review these areas, and it was an area of concern for them because the current trail that's being used informally is goes across a couple of sensitive areas that they would prefer it didn't go over, so they were glad to see that this plan was going to incorporate a bridge across Muddy Branch and alleviate some of those concerns.
So they're concerned about the gray area there?
They specifically had a concern about one
down there.
Area down in here. This is also National Park Service land up here. And although the trail goes through there, truth be told, I don't think they knew that people were using the trail. So it was.
So it wasn't worrying them that much.
No, but they have expressed a desire to work with us to make the trail. They like and support the idea of having a loop.
And then the third element of the proposed trail concept plan is a hiker-only natural surface trail network within Blockhouse Point Conservation Park. The major purpose of this element of the plan is to provide a natural surface trail network for the sole use of hikers. And this particular aspect of the concept plan is consistent with the previously board-adopted trail plan for this park. I thought it would be useful for you all to see a copy of the trail plan for Blockhouse Point Conservation Park that was adopted by the Planning Board back in 1989. I was here at that time and actually worked with staff from Parkside in putting together the plan and have a fairly good understanding of where the problems were that gave origin to this effort. At the time, we were experiencing a significant degradation of resources in the park. Folks were entering from north of River Road along the Muddy Branch Stream Valley, largely on ATVs and four-wheel drive vehicles. And they were causing a significant amount of damage on the floodplain of Muddy Branch.
So that's where the purple arrow was.
Correct. On the south side of River Road, we were having a significant problem with new trails that were being constructed by former owners of Calathea Farm. And there was a lot of degradation of areas along the Potomac River, as well as in the immediate vicinity of the Civil War ruins that were problematic.
Now, the red circle is Calathea?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
At the time that this plan was prepared by staff and adopted by the board, Calathea Farm was in private ownership. So there was not an opportunity at the time for us to work with Calathea per se to develop a trail linkage from Blockhouse Point across their property, across the National Park Service property to the CNO Canal National Historic Park. On the southeast corner of the park, well, I guess Barb wants me to talk about the overlooks. You can also notice this plan does not allow for equestrian access to the two overlooks along the river.
The current plan or the old plan?
The old plan as well as the current plan.
Okay.
At the time, there was significant degradation of those overlooks occurring in response to unauthorized equestrian access. The area in question is very steep. The soils are very thin. There are both archaeological and historical artifacts in the soil close to the surface. And we were just having a lot of problems with site degradation.
Now, is it possible, where is the little red elliptical, ellipse, I guess I'll call it, in relation to the dotted green line path? That's right. Yeah, where is the little red ellipse?
The red circle's right here. These are the two overlooks.
Oh, I see. The two black. Okay. Thank you. That helps a lot. I didn't know quite what those were. Okay.
So, again, the 1989 plan had no provision for access to the CNO Canal via Calathea on the west side of the park. Since 1989, there has been no equestrian access to the two overlooks of the river. And finally, the 1989 plan recognized the potential for an equestrian connection to the canal on the southeast side of the park. However, it did not propose a strategy for implementing that connection. Over the intervening years, equestrians from Calathea established an informal connection that was causing some degree of degradation to the berm of the canal. As part of this particular process for this plan, as Rob pointed out, we worked with staff from the National Park Service and identified a better location for that trail, and also laid the groundwork for a bridge that would connect or actually cross Muddy Branch Creek and bring people down a very short section of Pennyfield Lock Road to the canal.
But what's the circle with the purple line? Is that just irrelevant?
Okay.
That's a new alignment?
No, that's the last little tidbit I'll mention. The 1989 plan had suggested a connection from the parking lot on the south side of River Road to the Muddy Branch Stream Valley. And for whatever reason, that connection was never implemented. During the course of the many meetings that we had with both the environmental community and the equestrian community, there was sort of a chorus of requests for the establishment of that connection. So even though it was in the 1989 plan, the fact that all of the user groups, and I mentioned the hikers and the equestrians, but the bikers as well, had asked that we reemphasize the establishment of that connection as part of this plan. So as stated on the map, the trail was designated in 1989 but never implemented. And as part of the work program that would implement the provisions of this plan, we think that should be built.
I see it. Yeah, I see that. It's that little, it's a thinner purple line on the new map, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yep.
And where is the parking? Where do people park?
The parking is located where Rob is circling with mm-hmm. the laser pointer,
okay.
on the south side of River Road.
Okay.
There was a gravel parking lot
and
trail kiosk and trailhead constructed there a number of years ago by, was it the Northern Region, Jamie? With parking for both cars and or trucks and equestrian trailers.
There will be parking also at the Civil War implementation site?
That's correct. This particular plan had proposed a separate plan be developed for Calathea Farm,
okay.
A concept plan that would formally identify the location of the proposed visitor education center as well as parking facility and the location for stormwater management facility. And there, in addition, is parking there today. And according to the park manager, as recently as last week, members of the public do have an opportunity to park now at Calathea, provided they check in with the park manager and can access the trails at Blockhouse Point as well as those on the National Park Service and the canal via Calathea Farm.
I'm sorry, you said as long as they check with the park manager?
With the manager of Calathea Farm,
oh,
George
okay.
Senstack.
Okay.
Now, is he a park employee or a private employee?
No, he is
employee?
Not.
He's not, okay.
He is not. He is a private concessionaire who currently holds the operates the concession under the framework of a lease that was negotiated between...
Before we purchased the land, I remember.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
He was sort of grandfathered in
yeah.
in our purchase.
Yep.
And do we now have a legal relationship with him?
Yes.
MOU or something? Or?
There is a lease agreement, and the lease agreement specifies that certain things needed to be done. For example, the development of a nutrient management plan, the development of a soil conservation plan. And George is a good person, and he's proactive, and he has worked with staff in the Northern Region and the Natural Resources Division and our Park Property Management Office, as well as our staff in park planning, to put together those two documents.
Mm-hmm.
And they lay out a
he
framework.
Lives there, right?
Pardon?
He actually lives there, doesn't he?
Yes.
So he's there 24/7.
And they lay out a framework for approximately 65 horses that are maintained either in stalls or pastures. And we've been pretty pleased, I think, with the way that relationship is evolving.
Keep going.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been through this and we've all read the packet, so I guess focus on what's different from what you told us the last time.
What's different is that the public hearing draft lacked a comprehensive synopsis of the trail concept plan for this park. It was not very clear on the policy rationale for the three elements, in particular the shared-use natural surface trail that runs north-south through the Muddy Branch Stream Valley. It also did not articulate the work that had subsequently taken place in conjunction with John Parrish from the environmental community in particular to identify a better location for the section of trail north of River Road. The major change is that we're suggesting the public hearing draft be amended with a formal trail concept plan that clearly articulates the natural surface trail options for hiking only, shared use hiking equestrian, and then shared use all, and then also provides the background information as from a policy perspective, as well as a short synopsis of the field work that was behind those various alignments.
So the Muddy Branch element is just to include the lines that you showed us as part of the Muddy Branch trail plan, right?
Yes.
And do we have money to build them? It says as soon as possible.
They are in the capital program, and although Lynn's not here, I'm pretty sure that these are actually in our work program for FY06 that you've already approved.
Okay.
Going back to John for a moment, wasn't his major concern that we were trampling environmental species or native species or something to that extent?
John was concerned about the impacts that additional forest fragmentation would have on the plants and the communities that support them.
But your proposal addresses that.
Well, to the best degree possible. Now, ideally, if we were concerned about protecting those plants 100%, we wouldn't have a trail in there.
Right.
But that's not
enough. Yeah, I understand. Right. Okay. Right.
And we feel very strongly that the alignment that we have identified on the ground today does, to the best degree possible, take advantage of existing situation on the ground, takes into account the known locations of all of these plants, and puts the trail in about as sensitively as you could put it in.
And the whole trail is natural surface trail.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay. I think we've been through this a couple of times. We're pretty familiar with the plan. So let's just see if there are questions or comments.
Now, there's one issue I think that's not satisfactorily addressed to my satisfaction. I understand why there's, in the area around Calathea Farm, that unlimited equestrian use might be a problem. First of all, I think that pedestrians are going to do a lot more damage to the plants and the Civil War artifacts than equestrians are, but I'm in a bit of a quandary because I'll concede I went out there and I did take a ride. That's a beautiful ride out to the observation points. It's a relatively level grade. And I'm in a bit of a quandary because we have Calathea Farm. We have a farm's Friends of Calathea Farm. We want people to make lots of support for our park system and the equestrian community to make support. And then we're saying, well, absolutely no horses at all on what's a very nice ride, and it's pretty much at level grade. There's only one situation where I took the ride that it was fairly steep. And you've done a little bit better here in your presentation, but I was disappointed in the report because I think that was a realistic issue that was made by people that have some very vital concern in that. And there was no in-depth analysis, really, of what trails it might be possible to be a little more accommodating on and which ones are absolutely verboten. There's clearly some places where there's signs up already, sensitive area, don't enter, you know, by anybody.